Welcome to this episode of the AfriNuke podcast. On today's episode of the AfriNuke podcast, we have Adam Blazowski, the chair of We Planet. He has come to give us an interesting perspective of the nuclear renaissance, the Polish position. And now we are going to start the conversation that will take us around his career, who he is, the place he's coming from, and the nuclear technology front and development in Poland. Mr. Adam, it's been very amazing knowing who you are and what you have been up to in the nuclear industry and what you are doing for our planet. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
First, hello. It's an honor and pleasure to be on your podcast. Just to introduce myself, I have about 15 years of experience in the energy sector. I would call myself energy transformation engineer because I was involved in renewable energy and energy efficiency for most of my professional life. And this means buildings, energy efficiency, buildings, renewable batteries, electric vehicles, photovoltaics, and such. And this was my background. But as I'm really concerned about climate change and our development at the same time, I also realized that we cannot rule out nuclear power from this picture. So this was my realization that we have to do something about this. In case of a European situation, some well-developed countries like Germany decided to phase out nuclear power, which I think was a big mistake. And we started an NGO where we, as our citizens, or private persons, we would often go to Germany and protest the closure of nuclear power plants because we thought it's really bad from the climate perspective. So I'm both an engineer and also a co-founder of a Polish eco-modernist, eco-humanist organization, Photo for Climate, and also a chair of the We Planet. The We Planet is an alliance of such organizations all over the world.
Fantastic. Can you tell us a bit about Poland? Because you were talking about how Poland kind of gets its energy and how it is very much related to how other European countries got theirs. Poland sounds very nice, especially when you are using the pronoun that one is Polish. And I really love the name Polish, and when anything comes out Polish means it comes out very, very well. Tell us about the energy journey. Tell us about how Poland's energy and how it evolved generally as a country.
So when you think about Poland, geographically, it's a country between Russia and Germany. So this is Central and Eastern Europe, which is not the same Europe that everybody is accustomed to. Because when you say Europe, everybody thinks about France and Germany and Great Britain. But there is a whole lots of countries in the central and eastern part of Europe that have a little bit different perspective and very different history. Because when the big countries were traveling around the world and having their colonial empires, Poland did not exist. And a lot of Eastern Europe was controlled by either Germany or Russia or Soviet Union. So we have a history of becoming independent and becoming sovereign and fighting for ourselves and making our own decisions and really making sure that we are independent and nobody is telling us what to do. So this is the spirit of the Central and Eastern Europe. Which I think is important to understand for context. Poland was really undeveloped in the 19th and beginning of the 20th century compared to the other countries. And then we gained independence and the development and human development started to go forward. After Second World War, the country was really in bad shape. But we started to use our own resources in terms of Poland is very lucky in that sense to have big amounts like Germany, to have really large amounts of coal. And this coal has built prosperity.
Wow.
Of course, right now, when talking about climate, it's important to see that this prosperity is not sustainable. But at that time, there was really no other way, because Poland did not have resources for water. It's a very flat country, and we could not develop the country otherwise. So in 1960, every village in Poland was electrified. Wow. Poland is a country of about 35 million people, 26 right now. So it's much smaller than Nigeria, but at that time it was an achievement to really electrify every village, and it was possible with coal. And this is mainly hard coal that you have to really mine really deep into the ground, but also significant amounts of brown coal. And this has built Polish economy, and it has built our prosperity, which is often, I think, forgotten. But now it's over. Now we cannot use this coal anymore, and there are many reasons for it. The first reason is getting more and more expensive. You have to dig 1 kilometer underground, and it's just getting more and more expensive compared to other countries, Australia or South America, and it's just getting really expensive. And on the other hand, we see climate change. Climate change is happening, and it's a human factor, and it is undeniable. And as part of the European Union, we are moving away from fossil fuels. This is something that just must happen if we want to prevent climate change. So Poland is moving into renewable energy. We are building wind turbines in the sea and Baltic Sea and onshore, where there is a lot of PV. I think the last years have seen an explosion of PV deployment, but Poland is also moving strongly towards nuclear power, because we need this baseload.
Yes. Thank you very much. That's quite an interesting perspective of the Poland's position. And I am very, very impressed. I was really, really impressed when in 2022, about 2 years ago to 2023, Poland opened bids to welcome new nuclear power plant vendors. You have talked about how unsustainable it is for Poland to continue to use fossil fuels, even though it used it initially to gain energy independence, to develop at the initial stage. What did it take to get to this stage where you have now welcomed nuclear power plant vendors? And what is next in this new relance? I know that a plant has started to be built when Poland was still under the Soviet Union, but it was stopped due to some conflicting ideas. So what did it take to have a comeback and to this stage where you are now welcoming bids, you know, being Poland is nestled between developed countries, between Germany and Russia, as you said. But why can't it just get its energy? Germany, for example, has been touting the renewables and that it can be on its renewable, but everyone know how hypocritical they've been. They go and start up their coal plants. And Russia, on the other side, is very much energy independent or sufficient, if that's right. So, and tell us the journey of how Poland has traversed this trajectory to this point, and what it holds for the future.
So, from the Central European perspective, we are talking about Poland, Finland, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary. These countries are all in the middle between the big powers, and they are really, really keen on energy independence. So energy independence is a big, big issue. We all see that the German transition, the Energiewende, is not working out. It's not happening. And I mean, no, it is happening, but it is happening much slower than it could be. So the German phase out of nuclear really resulted in additional CO2 emissions and more increased dependence on fossil fuels. It was a huge mistake. On the other hand, the countries in our region do not want to import energy from Russia, be it electrical energy, fossil fuels, nothing. because this always comes with strings attached. So because we want to be independent and we want to be making, we don't want anyone to tell us what to do. It's just not possible to have this kind of deal with our eastern neighbor, and we just want to be independent. So Poland did. Poland was under the influence of Soviet Union until 1989, and then we started a nuclear project in Czarnowitz. And this was when Poland became really independent in 1990s. This project was stopped, and there were several reasons why it was stopped. First, our heavy industry, Soviet heavy industry, crashed, and we were transitioning our economy into a different European model, and we lost a lot of energy intense industry. So the collapse, there was a collapse of energy demand, and this was one of the reasons. The second reason was the freedom we achieved with the Solidarity Movement was really strongly connected with the unions of miners, coal miners. They were anti-Soviet, they were anti-communist, and they won independence for Poland. But on the other hand, they want to keep the jobs. So there was a strong lobby to kill the project. And the project was killed at the stage where we had about 40% of work done. And on top of this, we paid 40%, and then we also had to pay 30% of penalties for stopping the project.
Wow.
So about 70% of the cost of the nuclear power plant was lost. And until this day, until today, it's a national trauma. So people consider this as a huge mistake that we didn't do this. Slovakia, which is just south of Poland, was in exactly the same situation. And they are now building Mohovce 3 and Mohovce 4 nuclear power reactors. 3 is running, 4 is almost ready. And when they do, Slovakia will be completely energy in the electrical sector, independent and also low carbon.
Wow.
So it's a success story just south of Poland from a small country like Slovakia. And Poland just looks at this with envy. We say, oh, we were so close and we failed. So it's certainly a little bit of trauma that we didn't use this opportunity at the time. So right now, Poland is moving aggressively to build new nuclear power plants. There is an AP1000 project going on in Kochevo, north of Poland, close to the Baltic Sea. And this is already passed with environmental assessment. It's trans-border discussions, including Germany and Austria, two very anti-nuclear countries. In Europe, you have to talk to all the countries around you. If you build a nuclear power plant, you have to talk to all the countries around and get their approval to your environmental assessment. So they are checking you if you have problems or issues in your input.
Okay.
And this is a problem when a country is anti-nuclear, like Austria or Germany. But this is done. And then we are building a Korean project, and we also have an idea to build several BWRX-300 SMR reactors in Poland, just replacing coal units.
That's fantastic. It's a very big challenge for those who have not even started to see how much progress Poland has made, given that it was it had a little bit of drawback initially, but it has risen owing to its conviction and wanting to progress despite the challenges. And I wanted to, like, while you were talking about welcoming different vendors, I was like wondering, why did you people have to choose different technology and all of them are coming almost at the same time when you are welcoming this interesting technology? Left for some countries like Baraka, they had the first set of nuclear power plants from one vendor, and perhaps maybe the subsequent ones they may want to consider others. Maybe I'm not having a clear picture. Some people might want to say, okay, why don't you finish with one before trying the other one and see how you can go with it? But I guess you guys, you move very fast.
It's a good question. It's a good question, and I think there are many reasons for it.
Okay.
First, Poland is not as well organized as I would say as France in 1950s. Okay. You know, France and the Messmer plan, and France just built one design and one after another, 15 reactors,
yeah. Yeah.
15 power plants in like 15 years and 50 reactors. So Poland does not have yet this kind of strong institutions to have this kind of general long-term thinking,
okay.
I have to admit. But there are also other reasons. Nuclear industry, I would say, was in crisis. It's slowly coming out of the crisis.
Okay.
And we just need a lot of nuclear. And we cannot wait for building one after another. We have to start building one power plant in the north and another one and another one. So we just need them urgently now because
wow,
the coal
nice.
Is too old. It's falling away.
Hmm.
So it's a bit like China. China invited Westinghouse and EDF and Russians, and they started building everything and just learning from them. And the last reason is that if you have everything of the same design, you also run a risk, which France had 2 years ago in 2022, that you discover an issue, a problem, and this problem is suddenly visible in 5 or 10 reactors at the same time. So if they are different, you have heterogeneity, and it's you leverage the risk a little bit on technical issues,
yeah.
But it's more costly.
Yeah, it is.
But it's easier to build more at the same time. Yeah.
Very good. And I'm seeing a very big lesson for developing countries like in Africa and other continents where they are yet to build out their nuclear power plants. You know, South Korea, for a start, started with the US Westinghouse design.
And yes.
They scaled it from there. Poland started with
yes.
the VVR, the Russian design, but they did not continue from that. So we see an interplay of different kind of geopolitical condition, but nevertheless, the idea is to push forward for a clean energy that nuclear can provide. And that brings
yes.
me to what role the institution played. What institution played the most critical role in the nuclear renaissance in Poland, and how can other countries replicate this kind of role, a similar result? Because I see Poland as a very good example for developing countries that want to bring nuclear on board. How can they replicate this, and what institution played the most critical role?
I would say it's the Ministry of Climate and the subsequent prime ministers.
Wow.
So there was a universal agreement between even opposition party. Poland is really divided democratically. So we really have this degree don't talk after every election. But still, despite this fact, every party agreed that nuclear is a priority. They maybe didn't develop as fast as they should because the first declaration came in 2007, so a long time ago.
Okay.
But even after changes in the government, in the democracy, you have consistent prioritization that nuclear needs to be part of the picture. So renewables, yes, PV panels, offshore wind, yes, but also nuclear needs to be. So we had this consistency in the government, and I think this is true. And yes, I think this is answering the question that everybody in the government agrees, even the government changes.
Cool. That's a very good example of how you people are able to ensure continuity, unlike in some developed
yes.
clients in Africa, where if the previous administration goes, the next one just starts a new thing, and which might mean destroying what has happened in the previous one. So kudos to the government of
yes.
Poland for sustaining the momentum to Poland. And I want to commend all levels of the government and hope that the African government will also look in the same direction of doing something similar. At We Planet, which is your company right now, where you are the chair.
It's a charity.
Oh, it's a charity. Okay, fine. You are leading the charge to strengthen the Eco-Modernist Manifesto. I know I've read a few about the Eco-Modernist Manifesto, which was published some years ago, and a lot of amazing things have been spun out of that idea. Can you tell us a bit more about We Planet?
So We Planet is an alliance of organizations that are NGOs, non-government organizations, and they are in different countries. we've done it in Kenya, Uganda. We have this in Netherlands, France, Poland, and Finland, and Germany, right? And we are also talking with Bangladesh. So this is a new kind of movement that talks about environment in a different way, because we think the old way of talking about nature conservation and environmentalism is not really up to date. We are much technology positive, not techno positive. We think technology will have a big impact on our lives and environment. We are much more concerned with human development. I think the old green movement was very focused on Western wealthy people who were very skeptical about developing countries. And the eco-humanist, eco-modernist is also about human development, that people need to flourish, people need to have jobs, people need to have facilities, people need to have vaccinations and healthcare, at the same time protecting climate and nature, biodiversity. So it's much more difficult, much more challenging role. You know, it's easy to save the climate and just keep people poor, but this is not a solution. This is not something worth fighting for. We have to keep developing for the people at the same time saving climate and biodiversity. So it's a much more complex task that can be solved with technology. And nuclear is an important element because nuclear is saving nature. Absolutely, because it's so energy dense. You have 50, 60 hectares of ground dedicated to nuclear power plants, and this produces so much energy that you don't have to harvest from biofuels or bioenergy or burning wood or building thousands of wind turbines and so on. It's not that we are against wind turbines, but it's the mix of wind turbines and nuclear is much better for the environment than just wind turbines and gas plants. So it's a pragmatic environmentalism, and this is what we want to talk about, that we have to change our green thinking, and we have to include the technology into our approach to nature conservation and human development.
Are we planning to launch a campaign that is tagged Rethink Nuclear? What is the aim and the vision of this campaign, and what does it look forward to achieve?
If I can summarize this in one sentence, we think that historically, nuclear power has not been having a very good time, especially in well-developed countries like Western Europe. And this has led to some really tragic and disastrous decisions, like the German phase-out of nuclear, the Belgian nuclear phase-out, Spanish nuclear phase-out, Switzerland nuclear phase-out, plans that didn't finish yet, but there is a risk that they will happen. And sometimes, I'm sorry to say this, but the old environmental movement was complicit in this. They were actually advising to do this. And we said, no, this is really wrong. Cannot have a stable climate and on nature conservation and give up on nuclear, because you're going to increase the emissions and you're going to be more reliant on fossil fuels. In our case, it's even worse because the fossil fuels come from Russia, and this is hurting our energy independence. So it's even worse. It's not only climate, it's not only biodiversity, it's also, are you going to have a war in your country or not? For the Central European perspective, it's very, very dangerous to reject you. And so this campaign is about how, if we want to be evidence-based, if we want to talk about real science and what is pragmatically good to develop, then we have to rethink nuclear.
Like you mentioned, some countries in Europe are truly reconsidering their nuclear power projects.
Yes.
Which is quite detrimental to the climate change campaign that we pursue or we keep preaching about? So what are the planned actions, and how is We Planet contributing to sustaining the nuclear power project in Europe?
What do we do? We act in several different areas. We really build social support. So we really convince people. We write articles, we write reports, we try to influence the policy. So we talk to the politicians and we explain them this is the arguments for and against. We actively try to convince anti-nuclear parties to become pro-nuclear. So we talk to the politicians and argue and go to the debates and argue for pragmatic and eco-modernist, eco-humanist approach. This was very successful in Finland, where a Green Party in Finland completely turned 180 degrees and they were against nuclear, and now they are in favor of nuclear. So in other countries, this is also happening. So a democracy, you need to be able to talk with everybody, even people you disagree with. If there is a party that you don't agree with, but you think they will run the government, you need to talk to them and you need to be able to give them arguments and argue for the rational and evidence-based solutions. So we try to do this. We want to be above the political divisions. We want to talk to everyone. And we just want to talk about climate change, biodiversity loss, energy crisis, energy independence, the things that need to happen, need to be prevented before it's too late, before we are completely dependent on fossil fuels or we destroy our environment.
So how is We Planet tackling the concerns of nuclear waste and other nuclear energy-related objections, especially in Europe? And how is it addressing those concerns, and how successful has it been so far?
Well, I really don't consider nuclear waste a big issue, because we have to look in the context, and the context is really brutal. We have been storing. There is no solution. There is no solution for the waste from fossil fuel power plants. We haven't found a solution to store the waste of coal power plants. If we just dump it into the air, we dump it into the atmosphere, we dump all the waste there. And nuclear is the only technology that takes care of 100% of its waste. So it's a tiny cask of nuclear waste that can be stored in underground location that is safe, doesn't hurt anyone, doesn't affect the environment. This is perfect for the environment. And Finland is a good example of this, because they have this kind of storage. There are 4 million times more waste from coal power plant than from a nuclear power plant. 4 million. So it's such a huge number that waste is really negligible in the size. And we just argue with the politicians and we say, look, this is really a panic from the old movement, all anti-nuclear movement. But you have to be evidence-based. You have to look at data. It's really not an issue compared to what we have right now. And people have been scared about this. People have been traumatized by films and movies and stories. You have to look at the data. You have to look at the evidence that it's really the best for the environment in the run, because all the other alternatives are much more intensive for the environment.
I would like to appreciate your perspective on nuclear waste. In fact, I am educated right now. We've always complained about the waste from nuclear, but we seem to ignore the waste from fossil fuel. And
yeah,
I think that the carbon 2 oxide from fossil fuel, it's actually what is having us in this issue of climate change. And we still focus so much on nuclear waste instead of the waste of coal plants and fossil fuels. I so much appreciate this perspective. It's educating even for myself. I understand that We Planet has an African campaign. They have some of their campaigns focused on Africa. This campaign also focused on nuclear energy development in Africa, or is it just environmental concerns? And if it is also focused on nuclear energy development in Africa, how successful has it been?
Well, we have a campaign, Switch On Africa, right now, which is about connecting people to the grid and connecting people to the electricity infrastructure, because there is no easy way to develop without electricity. I think, this is my personal view, electricity is a human right. You need to have electricity, like you need to have water, and without electricity, people die. So this development, this electricity needs to be stable. It needs to be reliable. Cannot be electricity that comes and goes, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. This is not the way to develop. You need to have stable electricity, to have jobs, to have industry, to have development. And we are an environmental organization. And I'm sadly to say, in the past, a lot of these environmental organizations have been awfully quiet about people well-being and development. And because, I'm sorry to say this, in the past, in Europe and in the West, a lot of the environmental organizations were skeptical about human development. This is a big mistake. So we absolutely acknowledge human rights to develop and prosper and flourish with the conscience of climate change and nature conservation. And this requires technology. This requires electricity for people. This requires services for people. An example is biochar. You burn trees, you create wood for burning in your home. And this produces pollutions. It kills people by bad air quality. And it also removes the forests. So you need to have replacements for this. And one of the replacements is electricity. I would even argue, and this is not a very popular, this is my personal opinion, I would even argue that gas, LPG, is better in this situation than cutting wood and forests for cooking. So we have to look for pragmatic solutions. We need to look at evidence-based solutions. And human development is absolutely an important element of saving nature. We cannot do it without.
At We Planet, you preach the eco-modernist manifesto as opposing the traditional way of getting things done. How feasible is this in developing nations like we have in Africa? How achievable is it for us here within the shortest time frame? And how much does We Planet Africa encourage this in its programs?
Well, it is possible as much as we, the global north, recognize that we are part of the same planet and that we are not living in a single country that needs to go to, for example, 100% renewable energy, and then it's done, it's over, and we are happy, we did our goal. No, the whole planet needs to be 100% clean energy. And we want to change this thinking in the West that is really compartmentalized, and everybody is just thinking about himself and his own country. And we want to advocate for a global thinking that planet as such is our responsibility. We are not strangers on the planet. We make decisions how it's going to be going and what we do. Like, and we want to advocate for this responsibility, global responsibility for everyone in the world, not only individual countries.
Yeah. As the chair of We Planet, what is inclusion and diversity like in your organization? How much is this principle applied to getting everyone and carrying everyone along in the affairs of the organization?
This is a highly important element, not only in saying, but also in practical words. We want to give voice to those who haven't been heard before. We want to include, being inclusive in other voices. Just this example right now that It's not another, WinPlanet isn't another Western NGO that has all the answers. Even the fact that Central Eastern European countries like WinPlanet Ukraine or WinPlanet Poland are in this movement, it already changes the perspective. It's not the same kind of Western NGO. It is a very pragmatic, diverse group of people that takes decisions democratically. So we have a democratic system. A lot of NGOs are really functioning like corporations, that you have just two or three people at the top and functions like a company. We are different in the sense that we are a social movement where we really have members and we make decisions as a board, as representative. So this democratic component is important to so that the voices can be heard, not only the same old story of two or three people who make all the decisions. So this is making a big difference.
That's good to know that WinPlanet carries everyone along to the best of it. Do you have any parting words or recommendations to people who are coming into the nuclear industry, like youngsters?
Thank you very much for the invitation. My parting words would be try to be able to overcome the division in our societies. Social media are enabling divisions in the society. People who have different background, they have different nationality, maybe they speak a different language, they are very often put against each other. And especially in a country that has a lot of political arguments and tensions, you have to be able to talk with everyone. With the climate change, biodiversity loss, human poverty, this is a problem that is universal. It's not limited to one or two political options. So try to be at least, you can disagree with some, but try to at least agree that these things are priority, that these things, even if we don't agree on social issues or other political topics, we can still agree that the planet needs saving, that people need development. Electricity is important for humans. So try to build this kind of bridge with everyone that you interface, because this is ultimately our planet and we are all crew of this planet and we are responsible for it and for ourselves. Try to have these connections with everyone, even the people that you disagree with. So thank you for the invitation. If you have questions, please feel free to ask on Twitter. I will respond. If you have critique, that's also okay. Something unique about WinPlanet is that we really cherish being wrong. If you're wrong, you admit to it and you're happy. It's not something to be ashamed for. It's something to be proud and happy because you learned something new and your knowledge is better and you know truth more. So this is something to be proud of. So we are absolutely open to critique and discussion. And it's a really pleasure to interact with you if you have different opinions. So I'm going to see you on Twitter, and if you have questions, go ahead and answer. And
thank you
so
very,
we can
very
have
much,
a profit.
We want to call it a wrap for today. And thank you, everybody in the audience, for showing up out of your very busy schedule. We understand that this is usually a very busy time, and we understand the power and network situation in Nigeria right now, but you all found a time and the opportunity to show up. We are very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Connect with you some other time. Bye.
See you. Bye.